This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
Hour number two, Ben and Woods on a Friday, broadcasting live from the Bill House Studios. We know how. And I would say there are four teams in Major League Baseball that are affected even worse by the Dodgers' spending the last few years. Every team in baseball right now is mad that the Dodgers signed Kyle Tucker to a four-year, $240 million contract. By the way, only $30 million of it deferred.
Yeah, only.
I think $10 million in each of the last three seasons. Does include, I think I saw a $64 million signing bonus.
That's so a nice
a nice little Friday bump to your checking account. Just right there. All right, that's $64 million into the account today. But there are certain teams, and maybe actually really only three. I'll take the Rockies out of it. But the Padres, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks are in the unfortunate situation of being in the same division as the Dodgers during this era. You know, you can be in any other division in baseball, and you don't have to worry so much. If you're in the National League Central or East, you could say, well, it's a tougher path to the number one or two seed, a bye in the first round of the playoffs, because the Dodgers are almost certainly going to get one. They didn't last year, but probably will this year. If you're in the American League, you don't have to worry about the Dodgers at all unless you get to the World Series.
Right.
So 15 teams, you know, don't have to even think about it until the end of October.
No, that's a little bit of interleague.
A little bit of interleague play, but the Padres, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks are essentially all, first of all, locked out of one path to the playoffs. That's winning their division.
Correct. That'd be very difficult.
I'd be shocked if any of those three teams were able to have a better record than the Dodgers. The other negative part is that it's an unbalanced schedule, not as bad as it used to be, but you have to play four series against the Dodgers, the best team in baseball, which makes it harder then to earn a wild card spot to the playoffs, because your strength of schedule is always going to be just a bit tougher than any other team in baseball, because you have to face that team more than obviously any other team in baseball in your division. So it does impact the Padres. And there's nothing they can do about it. They just happen to be in the same division as a team that is going on an historic run, that is spending at unprecedented levels, and is showing no signs of slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, the Dodger fan was in the chat earlier, and I was like, well, explain how we have the best farm system in baseball. And I said, well, you never have to trade any of your prospects, like, ever. Like, you know,
that's part of it.
It's a huge part of it. You know, you don't have to use those guys as capital to get players with 2 years left on their deal to come and try to win a World Series for your team. But now what you're able to do is just sign mercenary after mercenary after mercenary after mercenary. And again, that's the way that they have chosen to do business. It's worked for them. They've won the last two World Series, and again, as you mentioned, a coin flip to win their third.
It's it also never gets pointed out. It always gets pointed out how close the Dodgers were to losing the World Series the last 2 years, that's pointed out by the Ken Rosenthals of the world, who want to argue that baseball doesn't have as big of a problem. What's never pointed out is that, in reality, the Dodgers probably should have won two or three more World Series over this run.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of our calling card to make fun of Dave Roberts for continuing to blow it every year.
If they hadn't completely, you know, stubbed their toes in a couple of those postseasons when they were the favorites going in and fairly dominant favorites, then what would we be saying if they had not had the poor Dave Roberts managed, you know, playoff runs that ended in shocking eliminations early? If they had won five of the last six World Series at this point, what would the conversation be like today? And now they're adding Kyle Tucker. They already signed the best relief pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
Now they've gotten the best player available on the market, and I predict they will land the best pitcher when they trade for Tarek Skubal. Well, the two-time defending World Series champions, by the time the season starts, will have added the best player, starting pitcher, and relieving pitcher in baseball. Is that good for the game that the best team gets the best in every category?
The funny thing is, if they don't get Tarek Skubal, if for whatever reason the Tigers go, we don't like Zaire Hope, we don't like,
which is possible,
you know, we don't like this package you're putting together. Ben Kasperius doesn't interest us. they can go, all right, we'll just sign Framber Valdez. You know, I mean, they really could. They could just say, hey, Framber, we'd love you. You know, we want a left-hander. You're a left-hander. You're very, very good as well. That's still on the table because Framber's has not signed anywhere either. But yeah, it's really, really interesting.
I will give Dodgers ownership credit, especially for one thing, though. No one would have been mad if they didn't sign Kyle Tucker.
Correct. Correct.
And they still would have been World Series favorites.
Correct.
And they would have, because, again, they're paying the luxury tax this year and every year on Kyle Tucker. So, essentially, that's $120 million that they could have pocketed instead and still had the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
But they are saying, you know what? I don't need to keep that $120 million. Let's do this. I will give them some credit for that because I think the temptation, if you're an owner and you know no one's going to be mad if you just pocket that $120
million. Yeah, if you just run it back after adding Diaz and maybe a couple other little pieces to help round out the roster, give you a little more depth.
And I don't even know how much better Kyle Tucker makes the team. Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, but they're already so good. It's fractional improvement at this point. And you're spending unbelievable gobs of money for fractional improvement on the already best team in baseball.
Yeah.
I'll tip your cap on that because even though it's a consortium of Guggenheim partners that are phenomenally wealthy, $120 million is still $120 million. That they are paying. Yes, not all to Kyle Tucker. Some of that goes to the Major League Baseball revenue sharing. Some of it goes to the players' retirement fund. That's where luxury tax money goes eventually, but it is coming out of the Dodgers' pockets. The Dodgers' owners are paying that money, and they probably didn't really have to. It's not because of pressure from their fans that are saying, "Yeah, we're not going to show up unless you sign Kyle Tucker." I mean, you know, wait for attendance to plummet at Dodger Stadium. No, they had no external pressure to do this. This is all just their desire to keep it going and keep winning, and I do admire that. I really do.
It's something. It is something else. Greed is one of the seven deadly sins, and it hasn't bitten them yet. You know, and you got to think that it will at some point. But I don't know.
I mean, the worst kind of greed would be then just to take all their money.
Correct. It's a different kind of.
You know, this is a different kind of greed.
Maybe this is gluttony.
This is gluttony. Gluttony. Yes, I think this is gluttony.
It's gluttony. Exactly. So I don't know, man. Again, I wasn't super moved. Based on the stories that I heard about Kyle Tucker, I mean, again, he could get in there and they could say, we can fix him. You know, we can fix him. Yeah, he's a little bit rough around the edges, maybe this, that, the other, but he comes in here.
A not fixed Kyle Tucker is a really good baseball player.
Yeah, exactly. Even a Kyle Tucker that plays 120 games is still a guy that you want to have. Now, again, $60 million a year with the tax, 120, pretty nuts.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah. It's insane that they're paying that much. Now, would it have been less if Kyle Tucker had gotten that, 7 or 8 year deal that he wanted? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the reason it's so high in average annual value is because it's so short. And he does have opt outs after the second and third year. So if he's still craving that long term deal, he could opt out after 2 years with the LA Dodgers and try to hit the open market again. But, you know, for now, I mean, he's actually by present value dollars, because so little is deferred. It's the biggest per-year contract of all time. Now, Shohei gets more, but so much of it is deferred that the value of his contract is actually per year lower. This beats Juan Soto's and is now the highest individual contract of all time on a per-year basis.
You know, I think if you're a Met fan, you're in a bit of shambles right now. I think Blue Jays probably felt they were in on him. I think they made a long-term offer to him, but you know, Steve Cohen wanted to throw money at Kyle Tucker to get him in there as well.
They did. They offered him $55 million a year.
Yeah.
They offered what they probably thought was a ridiculous sum, and they got beaten by $20 million by the Dodgers.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. If you're Steve Cohen today, what is your pivot? Because you have to pivot.
Cody Bellinger?
Is it Cody?
But the Yankees are going to also be pivoting to Cody Bellinger.
Is it using some of those prospects and going, you know, going to Detroit and saying, we need Tarik Skubal, we need him right now. We'll eat all of it, you know, the rest of it, and we have the money, and we have the prospects that you want. We have arms, you know, we have young arms. Tarik Skubal solidifies their rotation. But they do need to pivot. I think if you're a Met fan, you're screaming for a pivot today. It is, and it would be a 100% reactionary move, also a great one, because it's Tarik Skubal. But I do think you have to pivot today.
I wonder how the arbitration hearing will impact Tarik Skubal trade talks. Because if Tarik Skubal wins, it's a little less leverage because there's a bunch of teams that can't absorb a $32 million contract. But if the Tigers win and he's only making, what do they offer, like $18, $19 million? All of a sudden, Tarik Skubal becomes a very palatable one-year rental in which a lot of teams would offer major prospect packages back for. So, do the Tigers wait and see if they win that and are in a position, advantageous position, or are they afraid that if they lose, they'll lose some of their leverage in trade talks and it'll only be the big money teams that can take on an extra $30+ million in salary at the last minute before the start of the season?
Yeah. It's
surprisingly few teams that can do that and go, oh yeah, 32, we already had our budget set, but we're going to add $32 million. Dodgers, Mets, Yankees. Very few other teams would be able to do that. At 19, though, there's probably another team that seems, we can stretch our budget for Tarik Skubal if they would trade him to us. Yeah. So that'll be an interesting dynamic next month when they go to the arbitration hearing.
It's wild, man, to sit here today, January 16th, and go, all right, it's wild card or bust for your San Diego Padres and your Arizona Diamondbacks. A wild card is really what you're gunning for right now, and that's okay. Maybe it helps, you know, going into the season going, yeah, this is what we're shooting for. We want to get to the dance, and as we've seen, anything can happen.
Well, and you can win the World Series as a wild card, but you can also have to play a three-game series against the Cubs that is low-scoring and comes down to a game three, and you don't quite get it done, and you never really get the opportunity. That's why a bye is so big. You know, I think people downplay the bye because teams have lost in the first, you know, divisional round after they had the bye, and they go, oh, they're rusty, and they would have been better off playing. You never are better off going to play a three-game series, a dangerous three-game series, because like this last season, you can lose that to another good team, like the Chicago Cubs. So the Padres don't have an avenue to a bye. They've never gotten one, and they don't really have an avenue to get one at this point, which is always going to make their path more difficult than other teams' potential path to a World Series.
Yeah.
Milwaukee Brewers got a bye last year.
Yeah.
Because they were playing in a fairly weaker NL Central. The Dodgers keep that path from being really available to the Padres, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks.
Well, it's Joe Davis and Oral Hershiser said, that's why they play the games. Still got to play them. Still got to get through healthy. Still got to win them.
No, they said that about the Padres.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying it about the Dodgers now.
They won't say that about the Dodgers.
You're just bored if you're a Dodger player. Like, if you're Teoscar Hernandez, you're like, oh, a May game.
You think they keep Teoscar? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what would you do? You could put Edmund out in center, I guess, and move Páez over and have Kyle Tucker in left. But
Hi-Sung Kim at second.
Yeah.
I mean, you could. There was talk about a potential Teoscar trade at some point, and then you get a little younger and prospects that you can flip at the deadline for whatever you need. I wouldn't be shocked.
Cody Bellinger's still out there for him too.
If they traded Teoscar still, but all right, we'll take a timeout. We can revisit this topic a little bit later. We'll certainly discuss it with Darren Smith at the bottom of the hour. Do have Don't Do This coming up in our next segment, including an update on the brother of a major NFL star appearing in Don't Do This. That is coming up next after a check of traffic with Ben Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. First, though, SDFatLoss.com is a great way to get your year started if you are looking to lose weight and you've struggled with other programs in the past and you're not ready to go full in with the injections because there are side effects. And by the way, if you start with the injections, you can't stop. You're going to be on those things maybe for the rest of your life, every single week, if you want to keep the weight off. But if you'd like a sustainable program where you can lose a ton of weight in just 2 months and then keep that weight off, and I've kept my weight off, my 40 pounds that I lost Going on 3 years now, SDFatLoss.com is the program for you. No exercise necessary, and you don't have to buy any shakes or bars or prepackaged meals. It's all based on real food, stuff you're normally eating from the grocery store. You're just preparing it correctly. You're eating it in the right portions at the right times based on what your counselor is telling you, and you can lose up to a pound of fat per day and 10 to 20% of your body weight in just 60 days. I did it. Chris Ello did it. Tony Gwynn Jr. has gone through the program. John Flint down the hall. Matt Scraby. Tons of tier ones have lost thousands of pounds in San Diego, and they've kept the weight off. You could be the next success story. And right now, they are still extending their New Year's sale. Get over 20% off for the best prices of the year. Why not? By the time the middle of spring training is there, you will be a new you, feeling better than you have in years by getting that weight off and going to SDFatLoss.com to set up your free consultation. That's SDFatLoss.com. Results may vary.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
If you're new to Ben and Woods, Don't Do This, pretty self-explanatory segment, yeah. I would say. It's brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, helping San Diego homeowners and contractors fix it, build it, and enjoy it. Got an update on the brother of Rams standout wide receiver Puka Nacua. I think we had this story for you last month. Samson Nacua will not be charged after he was arrested for stealing a car owned by Lakers forward Adu Thierro. Now, here's why he won't be charged. And this is fascinating, but I have questions. Apparently, Thierro's car is the same make, model, and color of his brother Puka's car. And Samson just thought he was borrowing Puka's car, okay, when in fact he was stealing Thierro's car without permission.
He's in it?
I don't know. This is the questions that I have. Was this at a valet? Were the keys already in it? Why were they parked in like the same spot or something?
Is it really that easy?
Is it that easy to take the car? It doesn't say what kind of car it was. My guess is it's some sort of fancy model, considering who we're talking about here. Both athletes with a good amount of money.
Yeah.
So I still have questions, but according to ABC7 in Los Angeles, Samson Nacua will not be charged with grand theft auto here.
Well, that's
it turned
good.
Out to be a fairly honest mistake.
Have you ever? I have opened
stolen a car. No,
no. I have, even I have in all my with all my trial, I've never stolen a car. I have walked up to a car that looks like mine and opened the door, and there was someone in it.
Oh no! I've walked up to a car that wasn't mine, pulled the handle, it was locked, and go, wait, what's? Oh wait, this isn't my car.
Scared.
I've even got in.
Scared.
You've gotten in.
I got into a car. It was the exact same car parked three cars away.
Yeah.
I got in. They left their door unlocked. I thought it was. I thought I unlocked it. Nope. I just opened it.
What
I sat in.
What was the first sign that it wasn't yours?
I think the seats were a little bit different.
The seats were off,
and just like the mirror was off. You know what I mean? I'm also 6'4", so I think it was probably a little tougher to get into this car. And I go, oh, my God.
Bo still laughs about it. Because I think we were leaving a Little League game, T-ball game, and I had the big wagon of gear. And I'm pulling it up to the thing, and I'm talking to him over my shoulder. Open, like, the back door for him. And the lady's like, ooh. And I go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And I'm looking like, this is my car.
She's terrified.
So
carjacking.
Yeah, seriously, like terrifying. Just some poor Little League mom sitting in her car waiting for, Timmy to get Brixton to get done playing, practicing baseball. And here I come, like, trying to force my way into her car. Bo was like, dude.
I was leaving a Padres
what are you
game.
Do it.
I remember.
It was a Padres game?
It was the MTS lot. Yep.
Ooh.
So good.
Yep.
I got just a small update on the story that we talked about yesterday for wide receiver, Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Jordan Addison. The details have emerged, Ben. We were talking about how do you get thrown out of a casino for trespassing? And so the police documents do indicate they were dispatched to the Noodle Bar inside the Hard Rock Casino, Tampa, Florida. And he refused to leave the restaurant. despite several requests from casino security. It begs the question, have you ever been removed from a bar in your life? Like, all right, buddy.
No.
You've been overserved.
I have never been removed. Well, no.
No?
I mean, I've been so tired that I kind of nodded off at a bar. And
this
I was
guy is like, on heroin. Can we get him out of
but
here?
But they knew me and they knew, well, he just gets up really, really early in the morning. He's not drunk. He's just really tired.
You've fallen asleep at a bar.
I have fallen asleep. I've fallen asleep just about everywhere.
That's true.
Know? Yeah.
So,
fell asleep at a red light one time.
He did. Yeah, yeah, we were, Arizona.
We were in the
it
car
was
with him.
Still red. I know how long the red's going to. Had it turned green yet, Paulie? It's okay. It's okay.
Well, I had
as
to
long
hit
as
you
still red.
And say, wake up.
I was terrified.
It was our first spring training, I think.
That was when we were staying 40
miles outside.
40 minutes away.
The Doo-Doo Motel. It was like a 40-minute drive on Bell Road just to get there. And it's just red lights, and there's no one on the roads, and we're just sitting there.
That was our first spring training at the Fan. And if you don't know this story, our boss, Adam, to save, I don't know, $70 or so, put his morning show, who gets up insanely early, put us 30 minutes from the facility. 30.
We were closer to Scottsdale than Peoria.
It was in essentially a motel.
It shared a parking lot with Waffle House.
And a auto shop. Auto
like a body
like
shop.
A Pep Boys or something. It was a Waffle House, Pep Boys, and then this dump of a motel. I walked into my room. There was feces on the curtains. Brown
you didn't
streaks
test it.
Of
it was
feces.
It was just brown streaks. You didn't test it.
It's what it looked like to me. You opened up the window to like a dumpster.
I opened
you
had yes, the dumpster. I had the dumpster window. Yeah.
I had this like awful, rocky patch of dirt. And
I had one of those big
brown
fans.
Grass. Probably had a big fan in front of his.
TV didn't work.
I know there was bed bugs. I laid down on that bed and I went, I cannot believe we are here for like the next 5 nights. And it was horrific. It was a horrific experience.
He hasn't booked any other trips since.
And he never will again. It was such a dump. But at any rate, I digress. So he was removed. Again, hey man, if they want you, he's obviously being, you know, probably loud, obnoxious. Hey, you got to go. No, I'm not leaving. No, you got to go. I'm telling you. I'm not leaving. Bro, it's never going to work out in your favor. Just, I've been escorted out of a bar before. It's not good.
All right, finally, a little doo-doo this for a Friday.
DD mega doo-doo.
I remember yesterday when we were talking about San Diego State's win at Wyoming. You were struck by the name of the Wyoming head coach.
What was it again?
Sundance Wicks.
Sundance Wicks.
Second season head coach for the Wyoming Cowboys. He also happens to be one of the best quotes in college basketball. And Mark Ziegler published some of his post-game comments, and I think you'll enjoy these, after they got run off the floor at their home floor by the Aztecs. You ready? This is Sundance Wicks talking just at the podium after the game. I feel like our team ghosts us sometimes. We show up for a good date, and then we'll be ghosted for a date with San Diego State. We'll be ghosted for a date against Grand Canyon. We'll be ghosted for a date against New Mexico. When are we going to show up to the date and ready to commit? Ready to say, you know what? I kind of like you. I'm here. Let's make this thing work. We're in a bad dating era right now. SDSU has what we don't. Pride. It's a proud program. It's a championship program because of the people who have been there and sacrificed and believed in the process that Dutcher puts them through. They don't run from it. They get other teams' best players and get them to defend, probably when they didn't want to defend at the previous place. And they do it because that's their culture. That's their standard. And we're fighting for our damn standard every single day. Sometimes you're just outgunned. Sometimes you're in a gunfight with a butter knife. I don't believe we're a butter knife team, but man, we've got some butter knife tendencies right now. We look like we were ready to fight. We looked all huffy puffy, and they're like, you got a butter knife, bro. You're not going to take us. Everybody else has Uzis, rocket launchers. They've got all this stuff. We've got butter knives. We had baked potatoes today for pregame. We had steak knives for the baked potatoes. That's how soft we are. We need steak knives to cut our baked potato open.
Good Lord.
Sundance Wicks, legendary coach.
I like this
of
guy.
The Wyoming Cowboys.
I like this guy a lot. Sundance Wicks is going to be going on to bigger and better things than Wyoming. I tell you that with quotes
oh,
like
yes,
that.
Oh, yes, no future whatsoever because in the modern day, players are not going to want to play for a guy that calls them butter knives after every game.
Yeah, and tell them how soft they are. It's so good. It's great.
But is that not a legendary quote or not?
What a rant. Yeah, I love that.
That was amazing.
I'm filing that away. I'm going to use that one.
And that is don't and do this for a Friday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, what does Darren Smith think about the Kyle Tucker to the Dodgers signing and the start of season number two of SDFC?
And I need some Peru talk.
Oh, yeah.
I got to find out about this trip of his. Looked incredible.
Machu Picchu.
He
went to Machu Picchu.
I know. He went there.
Well, I don't even know exactly what Machu Picchu is.
I don't either.
But
I know it's cool.
I know it's cool.
Some sort of like ruins on a tall mountain, right. I believe.
We'll find out.
Coming up next with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. About to get more Machu Picchu talk than you ever thought you'd needed on a sports talk radio station. Ben and Woods back on a Friday morning. I see Darren Smith standing by in our YouTube stream. He's going to join us for the first time in 2026 right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Quick question. Have either of you guys ever been south of the equator?
No.
Yeah.
Very close, Australia. But no.
You've been to Australia. Yeah. Okay, yep. There we go. I've never been south of the equator, but our next guest definitely has, as Darren Smith joins us here on 97.3 The Fan, back from his trip to Peru. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning, Ben. Good to see you yesterday. Yeah, south of the equator. I felt like that was one of those double entendre kind of
phrases.
Yeah,
but he's always pervy.
I'm not Woods.
I mean, you're way creepier
it's
and pervier than I am.
It's summer there right now, south of the equator. The seasons are opposite.
You know, that's the
toilets flush the opposite ways.
That's the big misconception on this program, is that I'm the creepy perv. It's so Paulie knows. I think we talked about it on the drive out to Arizona. Like, if people only knew how what a deviant we work with every day.
Yeah. Ben's much more a sniper.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
He pops up out of the weeds, aims, takes a shot, and goes, "Whoa, what? Huh?
That's
not me." Just back into the brush.
Yes, right back into the bush, as it were.
Back into the bush.
That's right.
Yes.
D. Smith, how was that trip to Peru?
It was incredible. Toilets did not go the other way.
What?
So, no.
I've been lied to my whole life about the toilets flushing the opposite way?
I think so. At least where I visited. That was our second time. We'd been to Colombia. We'd been to Peru now. And we did not notice that rumor. But it was incredible. And it is summer down there, so there's lots of beach activity. Spent a lot of time at the water, at the beach, went up into the mountains, went to Machu Picchu. We can also talk about Huayna Picchu if you'd like, because, you know, those are two totally different things in the same exact area. Everything people say about Peruvian food is true and probably understated. As a matter of fact, when you land in Peru, it's like, hey, you've just arrived in Lima. The local time is this. And this is where you can pick up your bags. And while you're here, be sure to check out our world-class cuisine. They have like 5 or 6 of the top 30 restaurants in the world in Peru. And, you know, it's great to go to those places. Obviously, they're destinations for a lot of people that are international travelers. It's all just to go to the beach and order the ceviche and have somebody come run over to it, give it to you. It's the freshest food. It is such a unique blend of Peruvian and Chinese and Japanese. And it was incredible. And, going and seeing Machu Picchu did not feel real. I keep looking at these pictures, Benny. I think I said this to you yesterday. I mean, if I didn't know that I was there, I would think that those pictures were artificial intelligence, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it looks like it's the set of Game of Thrones in the background, and yet there you were. It's incredible.
What
it's
exactly
inspiring.
Is Machu Picchu just for, it's Incan, right? Or what
yeah.
is, yeah, it's like
yeah.
Incan ruins in the mountains of the the Andes Mountains.
Right. And it was a city that was abandoned when, you know, the Spanish arrived and started conquering Peru, because, you know, the Spanish brought, do you really want this history lesson?
Disease,
I'll give it to you real quick.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, they were bringing their religion there, and they viewed the Inca religion, their relationship with nature. They did not view that. They viewed that as sort of, you know, hey, what's that all about? That's you know,
backwards,
that's sacrilegious.
And non-cultured.
So they destroyed all the Incan temples. And, you know, the people that were living in Machu Picchu, so the theory goes, decided that this place is so beautiful that we should abandon it before the Spanish find it.
Wow.
So they went off and you know, led them someplace else, and the Spanish never found Machu Picchu until it was discovered in the early 1900s. So it was preserved, and, you know, some of that has been a little bit rebuilt. And it's just an incredible, I mean, it's just an amazing thing to think about how advanced they were. Talking about hundreds of years ago, that they had aqueduct systems and they had irrigation and they had, I mean, just incredible you know, forward thinking concepts about how to build a civilization that, you know, we seem to struggle with here in 2026.
Could the Incans fix baseball's economic problems?
Well, I could certainly build a stadium that would last. I could promise you that. And you know, they probably could if you want to know the truth, because, you know, the Incan economic philosophy seemed to revolve around equality and about barter and about everybody being on the same page. So, you know, yes, they did have a hierarchy there, but they also believed that everybody should sort of be on the same level. So I don't know that the Incans would have been big fans of the LA Dodgers, if that's the transition we're looking for.
That's exactly the transition. Everybody always appreciates your measured baseball takes. I mean, my wife told me last night, oh, Jeff Passan just said they got Tucker. And I go, what? Oh, God. And I wasn't even surprised. And honestly, I was a little unmoved. I really was. He's great. He's a good player. Didn't really need him. Massive overpay. I mean, there's no question that's a massive overpay for Kyle Tucker. But they're in such a unique position, Darren, that they can overpay for anyone. And even if they stub their toe, it's not going to hurt them financially. They are printing money in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the question that I had too. Is as somebody who saw it and went, "Wait, what?" You know, I didn't realize. You know, I mean, I guess like in an abstract way, you think that the Dodgers are going to be in on everybody, but I'm like, well, where does he play? Like, what? You know, how does this work? And then the second part is, what's the market? You know, is there another team out there that was like, oh, well, we'll go to 230? Dodgers are like, no, man, we got to get this guy at 240. Like, who did they outbid for Tucker? I don't know. And you know, it just sort of seems like you said, and you said it perfectly, that it feels like an overpay, and it also feels like a luxury item, like something they just didn't need, just something that they wanted to do. And you know, it's hard for me to understand exactly. You know, it's not like, oh, okay, this guy, perfect fit. Absolutely. Makes a ton of sense, right? Mookie Betts, when they went ahead and got him, or yep, one of these starting pitchers. Yes, I get it. It makes sense. It's just sort of like, oh, okay. Like, huh, that's interesting. I guess I didn't see the need for that, or I didn't see the natural fit for the player or for the team.
Talking to Darren Smith here on Ben and Woods. And I guess the toughest part for me, and maybe Darren, you can help put it in perspective with the way you think about it, is I'm generally pro player when we're approaching a CBA. Like, yeah, I mean, the players are the product. They're the entertainment factor. I want them to be able to make a lot of money, but the player's stance against salary caps and adjusting the game of baseball, I don't think is good. And I don't want to have to cheer for the owners in the upcoming CBA
battle. You will, though.
Battle,
you're going to.
But I kind of feel like I have to, because the player's stance of, no, we can't make any adjustments to this, no, there can't be a hard cap in any sort of way, is just leading us down to more of this same Dodgers overspending, going to continue what they're doing.
But a cap is anti-labor. I mean, it just is.
It is.
You can't say I'm pro-labor and still be in favor of a salary cap, in my opinion.
Well, and I agree with all of that. And I've always been pro player as well, because I would like these owners to spend money. And, you know, we certainly loved it when the Padres, relatively speaking, were outspending everybody in the league.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, none of us sat around feeling sorry for the Pittsburgh Pirates. In fact, we started shaming the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we started saying that is crappy ownership over there. So, you know, we were part of that conversation not that long ago.
Correct.
It's not like we were always living in the world of the have nots. It's just that that's generally the place that we've resided. So, you know, we've had a taste of that, and we didn't go, oh, this doesn't feel right. You know, this makes me feel dirty. This makes me feel like it's unfair, like it's inequitable. And what about the Marlins? Will anybody think of the Marlins? Nobody said that here. None of us.
Please, but will someone think of the Marlins? Marlins?
Yes, and the Rockies, please. Come on, help out.
We actually
are talking
did.
About you're enjoying
Skip
Soto
Schumacher
and Machado and all these guys. Well, what about these poor? None of us said that. So, you know, you do have to be a bit fair, but this does feel like, you know, even the people that have been pro player and proponents and shamed and tried to publicly say that ownership should do more. Like, there has to at least be a conversation about a floor in the sport. Even us are like, I don't know. It feels like a lot. Feels like a lot for the Dodgers. And like, it's almost like, are they doing this deliberately? Are they doing this just because they're making a statement? You know, like, it's just kind of crazy how much they're spending. Now, like, the luxury tax is a form of a cap in that, you know, the Dodgers are now giving tens of millions of dollars to other teams in baseball. What are those teams doing with that money that the Dodgers are giving them? I don't know. And maybe that's a conversation that is less appreciated when we're just complaining about the amount of money that the Dodgers are spending. But I mean, it's just getting to the point where the public perception is so bad in Major League Baseball that it feels like this is inevitably going to result in another work stoppage. So, you know, I hate to say that, but I don't know what other conclusion you can really draw at this point, because it doesn't seem like all of us that have sang the same chorus over the years about these cheap skinflint owners that don't spend any money, it doesn't seem to have any effect on the general public and the opinion of the sport at large.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And somebody in the chat made a good point. Our pal Keeping It Real said, MLB has played the fan. They pitted us against the players in an ugly divorce. They propped up the Dodgers to get the fans to beg for a salary cap. MLB played us. That's not tinfoil hat stuff, by the way. Mm. This is Rob Manfred's dream. You know, And Darren, you were around. You were on the air talking about it probably every day when the Frank McCourt situation happened with the Dodgers, and they were bailed out. And I mean bailed out by baseball. They were pretty much set. You know, it was pretty much said, Guggenheim now owns you. They're worth a gazillion dollars. You guys are going to be fine. Rob Manfred has stuck his beak in on other teams' deals. He did it here in San Diego. This is not tinfoil hat stuff to think that, oh, this is exact. He loves this. Rob Manfred today is like, boom, now my owners are going to be happy. Everyone's going to be railing for a cap. Everyone's going to be against the players. Everyone's going to be for the owners, who I serve at the pleasure of every single day. That's not a crazy conspiracy.
No, I don't think so. And in the meanwhile, he gets a team that, you know, people will like watching and people will like
hate watching.
Yep. In the Dodgers as well. You know, that's the irony of this, is that, you know, as much as we are loath to admit it, you know, the Dodgers are a little bit of a draw because they have all of these stars, right? So, you know, he does get it to you know, these are two sides of the same coin in a way, in that he does get to make his and you know, take a firm economic stance on behalf of some of the owners who don't want to spend the money. But in the meanwhile, you know, he's also trying to sell a product here. And, you know, this is a product right now which probably brings in the most amount of eyeballs. So, you know, it's I mean, it's just sort of a real mess. And you know, I mean, I just keep going back. I think other owners could do more. I really, really do.
No question.
And you know, I mean, I think that is probably on one side of the scale. Everything else is on the other side of the scale. You know, if other owners were doing more and trying to be competitive and using whatever their advantages were, like the Dodgers clearly have an advantage of you know, they have the most the best economic situation in the entire sport. But other teams have advantages, and they don't really use or stress those advantages. And you know, that's disappointing to see if you're a fan of MLB.
Darren, let's switch talk to SDFC, where the big story is probably contract extensions for Mikey Varas and Anders Dreyer, but the juicy story is Chucky Lozano and how that is going to play out. Mikey Varas kind of gave him the opportunity, whether they were going to back off. He was very clear yesterday with us on the radio and then at the media session at the Sharp Performance Healthcare Center. They are not going to play him again for San Diego FC. That is what you got from that yesterday as well. They will have to move on from him somehow. But how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's now this is another standoff, right? I mean, we're talking about a morning of sports standoffs. In that, you know, if the reports are accurate that he doesn't want to leave, well, you know, what sort of situation does that leave San Diego Football Club in? I was wondering if you would have said at the end of the year, you know, hey, what is your best guess? You know, what is your best guess as to what is going to happen? I would have said that these two sides probably were going to figure out a way to part. You know, then I'm in Peru and I'm watching Chucky from the facility taking selfies and stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we buried the hatchet there. And then the bombshell from Tyler. You know, it's hard to know exactly where this goes. It's just unclear to me what sort of options Chucky Lozano has. You know, he seems to be indicating publicly through media that his only option at this point, the only thing that he wants to do is stay in San Diego. And it's quite clear. You mentioned Mikey yesterday with you guys.
Oh my God.
At the podium, even Anders, when he was speaking subtly, you know, none of the players want to, you know, come out. But he's like, yeah, like it was fun while we did it, but now we're going to be working with somebody else. And he just said it so definitively. It's like, they've all moved on. They have all moved on from this. And, you know, there are timelines now because this window, I don't have the exact date, but this window is closing pretty soon. And if Chucky has any desire to play in the World Cup this summer, he's got to get going to another squad. And the alternative is that SDFC is going to be on the hook for a lot of money here. You know, is that something that they're willing to commit to, that they would just be willing to pay this money? Because he does have a contract. You know, you cannot just release this person. So, you know, I don't know exactly where this is going to go, but I'm with you, Ben, and I'm playing catch up. That was my first. I just got back Wednesday. So, you know, all indications for me publicly and just a little bit privately are like this is done. Like this has run its course. This train has left the station. And we have all moved on. The players have moved on. The staff has moved on. And the organization has moved on. And you know, it's really now about figuring out what is next for him, because that's a lot of money sitting there that somebody's going to have to pay. And you know, it certainly seems like if you're willing to draw this line in the sand like SDFC has, that you probably are willing to commit something financially to you know, to realize that this isn't going to move forward. But I think they'd really rather somebody else pay the bill.
It's crazy, too, because I went back and listened to the interview we did. I was so impressed with Mike Yvaras. You rarely get that from a manager, coach, front office, rarely in sports, if ever. And I went back and listened, and we started asking him about Anders Dreyer. And the way he spoke about Anders Dreyer was even pointed, and I go, I feel like he's talking about Chucky here and what Chucky didn't bring because of how glowingly he's talking about Anders Dreyer. If you missed right. it, go back and listen. He's like, no, he's a perfect fit. He does everything the right way. And I'm like, oh my God. And then we get into the Chucky story, and he's like, he's not a part of this team. He's not going to be a part of this team. It's not going to happen. And I went, I feel so refreshed to hear that from a skipper. There was no gray area there.
No, and I think that's a good thing. You know, again, yes. like you don't want to be on the other side of that. You know, you would like a little bit of nuance, and you know, that's just not what's going to happen here. So I'm with you, and you know, he just makes it very clear. Like everybody, you know, yesterday the question, it's the right question. What about the distraction? He's like, hey, no distractions around here. You know, go watch his train. We're doing great. Like we have collectively moved on, and you know, I know we all found out about this at the same time. Yeah, you know, I don't get the sense that that was a surprise to Irving. Like, he was well aware. He didn't find out that he wasn't part of the future when Tyler Heap said it publicly.
Right.
This had been around for a little while. Now, whatever his motivation is with the selfies at the facility, I don't know. You know, I'm not quite clear on that. But, you know, that was not a surprise. So, you know, he knew it. And if he knew it, I'm guessing others knew it. So, you know, it just is the announcement was the news. That was the surprise for the rest of us, wherever we might have been located in the world.
Just to keep you for a second, because we've never really gone through this. What really happened? The reporting was a locker room incident October 4th when Chucky came out at halftime and had a blow-up and a, you know, confrontation with Mike Yvaras in the locker room. Now, that's not unheard of, Darren. We've seen players, you know,
managers
yell at managers, and you know, that's kind of a normal thing sometimes. It's emotional.
I heard,
and then they get over it, you know, a day later, and it's like, I'm sorry, I blew up. Yeah, you know, it's
I heard just 30 stories at fantasy camp of guys going at it with Bochy, right. You know, Bochy going right. at it with them.
Why was this unfixable? Why did it never? Why could they never get past it? What are we missing here?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a better answer. That was an away game, so we do those games remotely. But, you know, the sense was that it wasn't maybe about a moment, you know, that had been building towards that. You know, there had been some, you know, there had been a little, you know, some questions about some of the decision making for him, you know, in terms of how he was fitting in with the system. And it's a very, you know, it's a system oriented approach that SDFC has. And, you know, he's a little lone wolf, and that's okay at times. You need that, you know, like you need somebody's, and maybe it's just a little too much, and they were trying to get him to be a little bit more part of the program. And the decision-making that first half against Houston was not great. And, you know, he comes off, and I guess it just reached a boiling point. And again, this is me just speculating. I truly do not know the answer. But maybe it had just been building up into a point where the frustration boiled over. And it just got like, hey, like it's not working. We've tried, you know, we've tried publicly to you know, say all the right things, but it just, you know, it just isn't working. And, you know, again, like I, you know, there's some subliminal stuff there. I thought that came from players that gave an indication that maybe there was a little bit of, you know, a selfish persona to him that extended beyond the play, you know, that maybe was more prominent inside of the dressing room, inside of the locker room. So I wish I had a better answer. I don't know exactly what happened. Nobody's ever given me the play-by-play on that, other than I don't think it was just about a moment. I think it had been building to that for a little bit of time, boiled over. And then even, you know, I don't know that the apology, you know, maybe there was some questions about the sincerity of the apology and those kind of things. So, you know, again, I just think, as Mikey said, Mikey used a word that I had to look up. He said, holistically, it's not a good fit. I was like, whoa, what? You know, and it just doesn't seem like, you know, a person who's going to command this kind of money and who's this big of a presence, you know, they're just like, you had to just make a decision, and that's what they went with. And, you know, they had some success. They had success without him. So I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to that. You know, I think only the guys that were there will probably know the answers. But, you know, it sounded like there was some frustration building up, and it all got released in that moment in Houston.
Darren, welcome back to the Northern Hemisphere, and welcome back to Ben and Woods. Always appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank there
you,
buddy. Is D. Smith on our David P. Shapiro fan hotline. David P. Shapiro, criminal defense attorneys, helping good people regain control of their future when charged with a crime since 2010. Visit DavidPShapiroLaw.com.
It's crazy, man. How many managers and of any sport, head coaches, have been held hostage by the superstar player? And not here. Not happening. Not a fit. We're getting a divorce.
I've got a couple more thoughts. We'll reset. We've got Take on Woods coming up. My dog had to have surgery yesterday. All coming up on The Fan.